on the program right now. And I'm just wondering, as we're talking about fashion, and you talked about the different designs, especially for men, and I thought of your designs, your paper design. Some of your wearable art was maybe one of a kind and maybe only worn once, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I was reminded several years ago at the Met Gala, where everybody dresses up, you know, and just it's extravaganza of dress up, so to speak. And there was this one woman that came in, and she wore a dress, a gown, made of sand. Do you remember that?
It's not ringing a bell, but that is an event where some very incredible and outrageous things happened.
Yeah, it was so outrageous to wear a gown made of sand. I don't know if it lasted through the whole night or not, but that was one. But I know that you have a quote that you have been using as a beacon and guide. And you sent me the quote, and it was by Swami Kriyananda, who was disciple of Swami Yogananda. And it's, "The greatest art is determined by the quality of light that emanates from it. The clearer and brighter and whiter the light, the greater the work of art." So tell us, Michael, how does that inspire you?
Yeah, I heard that quote several months ago, and it was one of those that just leaped out at me. You know, once in a while you'll hear something as I'm working in my studio and listening to podcasts or conversations on, you know, platforms like this. And I just immediately had to scroll it down, because as an artist, I work really hard to not just serve my own creative voice. I mean, that is part of why I do what I do. But I have a real intention of offering something with my work, really offering something to the world. And I think that that's truly what an artist's job is. We have to be of service one way or another to humanity, to one another, to our neighbors, and to a greater good. So that's where, for me, making art becomes a spiritual practice as much as a creative endeavor or a business endeavor or whatever else it might be. So that quote was just so right on for me, because it reminded me that the art that touches folks the most and holds the most power or magic or whatever those words has this element of light within it that then allows the message of that art to transmit and to actually reach and touch people. And I find the art that moves me the most is truly exactly as that quote explains. It's art that has the brightest, purest, clearest healing light within it. And so for me, it's something that I'm searching for, both in the art that I look at and spend time with, and I'm constantly trying to find a way to do that myself. How do I put the light, the creative light and energy that moves through me, the creative light and energy that moves through all of us, how do we grab that and put it into our creative lives so that we can share it with other folks?
It's hard to even describe that in words, but we know it when we see it.
Mm-hmm.
There's something our heart resonates in a different way. We can feel it. We're receiving something that is tangible. I mean, light mm-hmm. isn't tangible, so to speak, but in some ways it enters us and it infuses us with energy in some way.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that that means that all art or good art, dare I even, you know, label good art or bad art, but it doesn't mean that it always has to be hopeful, optimistic, positive, bright and shiny. You know, I think that even the art that's about a very dark or difficult experience or tortured experience or kind of on the shadow side of things still has that element of light within it that allows it to connect and touch people. I don't know. Like you said, it's difficult to even bring words to it because I think it's something we feel more than we're able to necessarily articulate or use language to describe.
I'm reminded, and I don't know photographer, but photographs of empty streets. You know, that would be, I just remember seeing photographs and being so moved by them in some way. Now they're not emanating light, so to speak, quite, they're dark, but they invoke something deep within, that strangeness of dark and challenges we live with, or what, I don't know what it reminds me of, but you hear, so I hear what you're saying, that not all art has to be uplifting and, you know, beautiful, and in the way that we present beauty in a certain way, that's beautiful too. That's part of our human experience as well. I'd love to talk about creativity itself. And I remember at one point, a filmmaker, Dorothy Fadiman, has been on the program several times. And I remember one time she said, "The universe has a matching grant service." I love that. What she was referring to is that we have to step into that with our own participation. It's not like, oh, we wait for the grant to come to us. We've got to actually take that leap and participate, so that the universe is reciprocal, but we have to match our part of it. So what can you tell us about the creative process for yourself?
Wow, what a beautiful and big question. Thinking about what you just said about the universe sort of being part of the deal, I think a huge part of my creative process is about just getting started. Every single day, just getting started. I think so many of us as artists, or even folks who don't identify as artists, a lot of times we are prone to drag our feet and we're prone to, maybe be a little slow in rallying for whatever it is we want to do. And I find half the battle is just getting started and just showing up in whatever way that is, And I talk to my good friend, who's also the lead guitarist that plays with me when I perform, and we sort of have a pact where it's like every day you have to play your guitar every day. Commit to 5 minutes every single day, because inevitably, like clockwork, 5 minutes turns into 25 minutes, turns into an hour, turns into an hour and a half. Then you're suddenly late to getting dinner ready, and it's just that first little nudge that then sets the creative process in motion. And I think that that's sort of like stirring that creative energy, poking at it a little bit so that it can do what it's meant to do, which is grow and move through us and excite us and generate ideas. And so a big, big part of my creative process daily is just about getting started.
Oh,
And
I
then,
love it.
and once the wheel's turning, then I'm good, then I'm good. And then it
That's
can be
good.
8, 10 hours in the studio.
So, how do you avoid self-criticism? So, what do you do when that critical voice comes up?
Oh, I mean, part of me wants to answer that question just saying, hell if I know. It can be such a challenge, One thing that helps me a lot, though, is I remind myself, I don't have to show anyone what I'm doing. It can just happen first, and then later I can decide if I want to show it to anybody. So let those awkward song lyrics come up and get them down, and get them out, or sketch out the idea whether you think it has any salt or not, and then. So it's about not editing prematurely, because I think for me, if I know that I am just free to sort of burp up whatever wants to come out of me, which I have done in a sketch, I have a volume of sketchbooks on my bookshelf now that I've kept since I was a teenager. That is my place every single day, to just freely play without any judgment at all, without any self-limitation, as best I'm able, you know? And a lot of that has to do with just remembering I don't have to show anyone this. That's a second part of the process after the creativity has already been born.
I'm thinking of a quote that Michael and I, my late husband, Michael Thomas, and I would often say is, whatever you give your fullness to will take you where you need to go.
That's great.
It really is about what you just said. It's like just giving your fullness, not worrying about the outcome or how it's going to be seen by others, but just give your fullness. And it kind of takes you on its own path. Is that your experience?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like once, if I come to the table with all of myself, more times than not, and often to my surprise, I'm met with the same. A lot of times it doesn't look like what I think it might look like. A lot of, you know, it's often a very different thing than what I anticipate, but I am always met with something that then lets it continue.
I love that. So there's an element of surprise to creativity. It's not like we're structurally guiding it and making it happen a certain way, but it's an allowing, I guess, is what I'm thinking.
I mean, I remember this in art school, my art school days, especially, and also when I was an instructor at the university. A lot of times, what we see in our minds and how we're able to articulate it, whether it be in a drawing or a song, are two very different things. And I think the act of being an artist is about refining that skill so that your hands or your voice or whatever, however you make art, that you are able to articulate what it is that you see in your mind or hear in your mind, so that when it comes out on the page, it resembles what you have inside. And that for so many folks, I think that disconnect can be really, really quite vast. What we imagine is very different than what we actually create. So there's that element of surprise there too.
And also what you're saying too is that it's important to hone our skill in that particular art form. There's benefit to knowing how to draw and practicing drawing if we're a visual artist, or learning how to sew if we're doing fashion, or if we're playing an instrument, to really practice that instrument so that the creativity can flow out of our sense of having a practice within that instrument, that we really know the instrument and we know what it can do and we're facile in ways of doing it. So I guess part of it is also, as they say, how do you get to Carnegie Hall and practice, 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 you know, so is that part of it?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely part of it. And there's real pleasure in that. You know, I find there to be great pleasure in that. It can be torturous, you know, sort of day in, day out, you just keep doing it. It truly is a practice that needs to be refined, just like anything else in life. Anything you want to, I think of myself and other folks with a meditation practice, day to day, it's never the same thing, but it's about showing up and doing it every day.
Right.
That really then bears fruit in the long run. And, you know, another thing that comes to mind, Justine, is how I physically set up my space and my life to support the creativity. Like, since I am someone who makes art in a few different ways, but musically, creatively, with fabrics and other materials, I've arranged my studio so that within an arm's reach, all of those tools are available. And I don't have any... obstacle between me and the things that allow me to bring the ideas to light. Because it happens to me constantly where I will be cutting and sewing a garment, and then I get a song idea. or I'll hear, you know, hear lyrics. And so I always, on my cutting table where I work with fabric, I always have, you know, a tablet and a pencil so that I can scrawl out those lyrics when I hear them, or I can set down the scissors and go grab the guitar for a minute and sort of get that. And just the, and it's a very practical sort of way of thinking about it, just having it all within an arm's reach so that it's easy and there's nothing that's going to get between me and the idea coming to light.
That's wonderful. That's I love that suggestion for those of us who are trying to be creative in our life, mm-hmm. to have those tools right there, yeah. at your fingertips. That's wonderful. I know, Michael, you once spoke to the Contemporary Quilt Art Association. And why I bring that up, I was really excited to read that, because sometimes there's a concept that will show up in various ways, especially in my life, in my work. I will notice that, oh my gosh, there's a grassroots thing that is happening in the culture. There's a movement happening in the culture because some theme is cropping up like wild daisies in a field, you know, and one of those themes that has been cropping up for the last couple of weeks just blows my circuits, I gotta say, is quilting. Mm-hmm. And quilting, the way it's coming up is as a metaphor for the rise of the feminine in our culture. And rather than using the metaphor of the caterpillar turning into the butterfly, it's like stitching together a new culture. And it's coming from the women, and they're doing collaborative quilting. And this idea of quilting is coming to me, honestly, from my email, from conversations I'm having with people, from webinars, from research. It just, oh, there it is again. I was doing prep for this interview, and all of a sudden there was quilt again right here. Visual arts, and collaborative arts. I would love for you to have, if you have anything to say about quilting and what that means.
Oh, sure. Well, quilting is near and dear to me, and I know a number of people who are quilters and do incredible things with it. You know, it's such a great example of another kind of, in one way, very practical art form that has a beautiful long history, versions of it in so many different cultures around the world, and such a great sort of thrifty and utilitarian starting point, but with infinite creative potential within it. You know, you think all of these discarded fabrics from old work shirts and, or, you know, discarded garments, towels, linens, whatever it is, that you then salvage the little pieces and the little stories of all of those and reassemble them into something new and beautiful. I mean, just what an incredible way to tell a story. You know, I think that there's the narrative aspect of quilting is something that really stands out to me. How we look at, and if you look at an antique quilt laid on a bed and you recognize all these fabrics, and if you knew the person who made it, you see, you know, you recognize grandpa's old shirt or grandma's old dress. You recognize fabrics and styles from certain eras, recognize, oh, there's the 1930s and there's the 1960s. And thinking about quilting in a more traditional way. But then, of course, the world of contemporary quilt making has just, like you said, blown wide open in terms of what you can do across this large surface of cloth as design, as narrative, as artistic expression. Really quite wonderful.
Oh, it is. And as you mentioned, I received a quilt from my aunt. And it was museum quality. She was asked by the Pasadena Museum to put together her quilts. That's the level of artistry of it. And when I graduated from Auburn, she made a quilt for me, and she called it Pieces of Childhood. And as you say, she was a collector, and she had collected all these fabrics. They were from curtains from her great grandmother, or aprons, or, you know, all these fabrics, and she incorporated them in the quilt. And what she did was she embroidered numbers on each of the fabrics. Mm-hmm. And then around the edge of the quilt, she coordinated the number with the person who it came from and their relationship to me. And it was just all around the edge of the quilt.
How great.
And then the other aspect of this story was that I wanted to make sure that this quilt stayed in our ancestral line for some reason. So I recently packed it up with the story of it and sent it to my brother's wife. My brother has passed on, but I sent it to his daughter. And she said, recently wrote to me, she said her daughter, who is in the eighth grade, took this quilt to her eighth grade class. She was so excited about it and presented it as a project to her eighth grade class. And that was so tremendously satisfying to me, to see this passing down through the ages, you know. And as you say, quilting has a long history. And I know that you love to, in your designs, to talk a bit about or to share the history of the garment in some ways. And that's important to you.
It's so important. And I think it's something really wonderful and unique to fabric, especially. It carries the story of our lives, you know, like thinking of all the fabrics and relationships in the quilt you just described, or the garments that I make, or, you know, we all have those favorite things that we love to wear. And within the fabric, it's almost like it gets impregnated into the cloth somehow. Within the fabric is that wealth of stories and feelings and relationships and experiences. And the fabric tells us that story and reminds us of it all. It's really amazing.
I think, Michael, like right now, people can't see you right now because we're in audio, but you are wearing a vest that you made out of an ancient kimono. Is that right?
So the shirt I'm wearing, yes.
Oh, the shirt.
The shirt is made from a very old vintage kimono from the 19 teens or 20s. And then I also made this raw silk vest that it's paired with it. Yeah. And I love working with fabrics from the past for that very reason, because I feel like I'm given a story. I'm given a history to then work with and bring my own history and story to sort of marry. And it creates something new.
That's beautiful. Yes. Excellent. Excellent. As we're talking, I'm just so inspired by your own creativity and how you are putting it out in the world and how you are influencing people to just be more cognizant of the silent language of art in some ways. You know, it's not the written word. There's something else happening in the visual arts and in the soundscapes of music. And so I'm just so excited that you continue to export all of this great information and in your curations of design and all that you're doing. Thank you so much. Yeah. And I think you're going to keep it up, right? What's your next project?
That is entirely my plan, to keep it up. Honestly, I feel like I don't even have a choice in the matter, just because it's why I'm here, you know? So actually, this fall, I'm beginning recording a new album. A new album release, which will probably happen next year sometime. So the band and I, we are rolling up our sleeves and going to be in the studio to get some new music out in the world.
So that will be in 2026. When the album will be available.
And correct.
And it's just a labor of love I see in what you are doing. And I'm just so grateful for you in the world today and doing what you're doing, Michael. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Justine. It's a pleasure. And I really appreciate you taking some time to invite me and have this wonderful conversation with you.
I love it. I mean, I think our association goes back years and years ago to when I first was in contact with you. You said, "Oh, I read your book with Michael Toms of True Work."
That's
and
right.
I was just so you were a young fellow then at that point, and I was so delighted to hear that. So thank you so much. I want to tell our listeners that I've been here with Michael Cypress. And if you want to know more about his work, go to his website, michaelcypress.com, spells his last name C-E-P-R-E-S-S, michaelcypress.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3850.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.
CJSF is 90.1 FM, broadcasting from the heights of Burnaby Mountain.
This is Bird Note. Strident calls of seabirds fill the salty air at Palmyra Atoll, 1,000 miles south of Hawaii in the South Pacific. The atoll is a ring-shaped island encircling a lagoon. The island rests atop an extinct undersea volcano, its surface densely covered with trees and other plants. Living coral reefs lie nearby just below the ocean's surface. Black nottis and red-footed boobies fly above the trees that they nest and roost in, a rainforest tree called Grand Devil's Claws. There's a mutual relationship between the trees, the nesting seabirds, and the outlying coral. The bird's guano falls from the trees, enriching the soil. Rain washes nutrients from the guano into the ocean, enhancing the health of the coral ecosystem, which in turn supports the seabirds. Palmyra Atoll lost many native trees due to U.S. military activity during World War II. Invasive rats wreaked havoc on the island's wildlife. But it's now a nature conservancy preserve set within a national wildlife refuge. Conservationists eradicated the rats, and they're restoring the rainforest to strengthen the fruitful marriage of seabirds, rainforest, and reef. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note gives you the sounds of birds every day. And you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at Bird Note Radio. You're listening to